Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Oh, I tell you, Jennifer, she is really a party pooper.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Jennifer poops at parties, so she poops at parties, so and people know this.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
I poop at parties, but people don't know because I close the door.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Where does she go for it? Does she visit a water closet and make door of the open so people may see and smell things? This sound horrible.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague with you here on Portland Sports Leader. How about that? Baseball for 60 minutes.
A full hour of baseball, man.
May never happen again.
Somebody, I think it was Scott Seffit, shout out to him, had the tweet of the night. It made me laugh out loud when I read it. He said, it's such a weird night for baseball that the guy with a positive COVID test lasted longer in the game than the pitcher who was throwing a shutout.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what? Okay, that's where we're at.
That's a sore subject. Let's talk with Chris Trapasso of CBS Sports. He is a draft analyst, breaks down all things NFL and prospects related. He's got his latest piece out on our Twitter page, at Dirt and Sprague and at 1080 The Fan, about Justin Herbert and the incredible turnaround from his senior year at Oregon and largely his whole career at Oregon to LA and what he has done. We've talked about this before. We just don't recognize this quarterback because it wasn't the guy we saw in Eugene in many ways. And Chris does a great job of breaking it all down. So you can find his piece at CBSSports.com. And he joins us now. Chris, thanks for hopping on with us here in Portland, man. Great piece on Herbert and the offensive differences between what they were doing in Eugene and what they're currently doing in LA. Before we get to that, though, I do want to ask, you kind of highlight it in the piece, but for the listeners who haven't checked it out yet, what was your initial thought on Herbert as a prospect coming into the draft?
I was a pretty big fan of him. That by the time the draft came around in late April, a lot of people were down on him. And I think a lot of that had to do with what you were insinuating, that the Oregon offense kind of just put him in the background, that in his senior season that had all this hype, that had a lot of people thinking he could be the first overall pick. And he wasn't the focal point of the offense, but I had scouted him in 2018. And I thought he broke out in 2017 as a sophomore. Mm-hmm. So I had seen him make those big time plays earlier in his career when he was a younger player. I had him as a top 15 prospect and as my second quarterback behind Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah. I mean, I saw this yesterday and it blew me. Some of the numbers blew me away. And it launched into this whole back and forth with listeners about what Oregon did with him and what the Chargers are doing. So for those again who haven't read it, The percentages that Oregon ran the football on third and long, let people know what that is. And then how are the Chargers taking that and then putting him in a position that Oregon really was never able to do and make it easier for him to succeed?
Yeah, last year in 2019, Oregon's offense on third and long, and that was third and seven plus, ran the football almost 21% of the time, which is a super high number. Through five games, five Justin Herbert starts in LA with the Chargers, only 6.5% of the time they've run the football in those third and long situations. First and 10 situations, Oregon ran the football more frequently than the Chargers are doing. And then second and long as well. So I think they're just taking the reins off Justin Herbert and saying, we picked him number 6 overall. We're not going to try to protect him with by running the football on first and 10, on second and long, to hopefully get in third and manageable. They're saying, hey, you're our quarterback. We know that you have the arm, the athleticism, mm-hmm. and 42 career starts in the Pac-12. Go out there and show us what you can do. So I just like that they've kind of taken the lid off Justin Herbert and let him play and really tap into all of his talent. And I think we've seen someone that right now, probably along with Joe Burrow, is a front runner to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, Chris Trapasso is our guest here. CBS Sports covers the NFL draft, prospects coming out, and all things NFL related. His latest pieces on Herbert and the difference from what he was doing in Eugene to what he's doing in LA. You also highlight, and we all know this as sports fans, finding the right quarterback is probably the toughest thing to do in all of sports. There's so many different criteria that people use, and I don't know if we ever got a definitive one. Maybe Andy Reid's the guy to talk to, Patrick Mahomes, what he did with Alex Smith, Donovan McNabb, et cetera. But overall, it's a tough gig to try to find that franchise guy. And look, you can compare two guys from the same program. Kyler Murray's looked really good so far, and Baker Mayfield seems to be struggling. So it's not even given that a certain system will produce the same quarterback. When you talk to GMs, et cetera, and you know, Herbert's evolved part of this conversation too, but when you talk to GMs or execs during the draft process, how many different opinions or philosophies do you hear on how you evaluate quarterbacks?
It's countless. I mean, every team, every GM, every scouting department seemingly has different intricacies that they try to look for in these quarterback prospects. And I think you're absolutely spot on that quarterback is by far the most difficult position to evaluate. Because of all the cerebral stuff, and I wrote this in the article, that goes into playing the position, from how you deal with playing in a hostile environment when you're touching the football every play, to how quickly you can uncover and decide, okay, they're rotating their safety right as I catch the snap. Where do I go with the football, or where do I throw it if this linebacker blitzes or if he doesn't? There's so much of that is between the ears, mm-hmm. but then you also have to have, especially in today's NFL, not only a good arm that can throw an accurate football, but we're seeing some of these young quarterbacks, and Herbert's one of them, that can make plays outside the pocket with their legs, throwing on the run and picking up a third and long if everyone's covered, running the football as a scrambler. So there's so many elements, and every team looks for, you know, a few different things. But I do think that the trendy quarterback today is the Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen type that can win from in the pocket and when things break down.
Yeah, you want a guy that can move around a little bit. The numbers you break down on third and long from this year, too, are just remarkable. I mean, and again, as you mentioned, 7 yards or further on third and long. He's averaging almost 12 yards per attempt, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, and his QB rating is a 150.3. Which leads the NFL. How do you make sense of just how it's clicked for him so early on in what you would assume for a young quarterback would be a really difficult situation, and that's third and long against an NFL defense?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really impressive. Like, I don't think anyone, including myself, like, we weren't expecting this from Justin Herbert this early, but how I've kind of approached it this week, you know, researching that article, watching the film, is that, like I said before, and you guys and a lot of your listeners know that in 2017 as a sophomore, that's when the buzz started, where he made a lot of incredible throws that year, and that Oregon offense really let him just throw the football. They said, hey, we don't have a ton of talent around you, just throw the football, it's not a run heavy offense. After that, it kind of went to a defense and a run based approach. I've kind of approached it like, if Justin Herbert would have just stayed in an offense that featured him, it would not have been surprising that he would have had a fast start in the NFL. And he probably would have gone even higher in the draft. He wouldn't have been the second quarterback off the board. But because he was kind of sheltered in that offense the past two seasons at Oregon, that's why I think a lot of people are surprised that he's making all these great throws. He's always had the ability. And I wrote in the conclusion of my article that it was a masked year for him, that running the football on third and long 21% of the time, they just for some reason didn't trust him or didn't want to put the football in his hands in those critical situations. And I think the Chargers are saying, hey, we drafted you, we don't have a lot of time to wait, let's give you the football and see what you can do. Can you make those plays in those critical situations or not? Mm-hmm. And thus far, he's really passing the test with flying colors.
Yeah, Chris Trapasso is our guest here, CBS Sports draft analyst. He's got a piece on Herbert breaking down all the differences about how the Chargers have just basically unleashed him and why the rookie quarterback has looked better in the NFL than he did at Oregon. You're going to have to entertain us here for a quick second, Chris, because you mentioned something and I want to pick your brain. We've done the pre and post game show because we're the home of the Ducks here. So we've heard and read a lot of thoughts on from Oregon fan on what the offense has been. There's some games where they don't put up a ton of points and it's kind of predictable. And that's what it was for 2 years. It might be different now that Joe Moorhead's here. But in the film that you watched with Herbert in college, could you walk us through your thoughts when you watched a Marcus Arroyo-led offense in Eugene with a quarterback like Herbert?
It was, for me, from a draft lens, it was really frustrating because, kind of like I've said this whole interview and what really is the thesis of the article that I wrote, it was an offense that was based on controlling the clock, grinding out tough yards with the run game, and certainly Oregon had a great offensive line last year, a lot of veterans up front. C.J. Verdell was very good as a running back, and it was successful for the program, going 12-2, winning the Rose Bowl. But again, after seeing what Justin Herbert did in 2017, even some of the big-time throws that he made in 2018 when he kind of regressed a little bit, it was just frustrating. And it was almost an offense based in the past that teams are getting smarter, NFL and college, with throwing on first down when a defense is not expecting it and avoiding running the football on second and long, which will most likely put you in those third and long situations that you want to avoid as an offense. So it was kind of a classic style offense. I think Marcus Arroyo did a good job in that his job was to win football games, not necessarily make Justin Herbert the first overall pick, but so many screens, a lot of handoffs in situations where you wanted to see Justin Herbert throw the football. So it made him a more difficult evaluation, but I just trusted what I saw the previous two seasons and really liked him as a prospect.
Yeah, it wasn't even just running the ball too much, too. It was they didn't even use him as a plus one in the run game until the Pac-12 title game last year, and then Utah and Wisconsin couldn't stop it. It's like, where the hell was that all year? The Chargers are 2-4. They did Herbert did, got his first win over Jacksonville this weekend, but I might be wrong on this. Probably heading for a below 500 year. They're just rookie quarterback. A lot of guys are banged up on that roster. If that ends up being the case and Herbert continues to play well, we know the formula is trying to win with guys on a rookie quarterback deal. Where do they need to go with a, you know, get ballpark a top 12, top 13 draft pick? And then with free agent money, where would you like to see them build around him going to the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think even if the Chargers do go something like 6-10 or even 5-11, but Justin Herbert flashes like he has, and I'm not saying he's going to throw for 329 yards every week, but if he looks the part, Chargers fans should be ecstatic because that's what matters more than anything else. From what I've seen in this new wave of young quarterbacks that may not be these amazing pocket passers but are great freestyling outside the pocket like Herbert, that have the big arms that can throw on the run, offensive line matters more than anything else. I think there's a glut of wide receivers both in the draft every year and in free agency that you can sign. Mm-hmm. College just pumping out, you know, quality wide receiver prospects. I feel like we're going to say, this is the best receiver class, like every year over the next 5 years. So don't worry about that. Build the offensive line.
Yeah.
I live near Buffalo, and seeing what Josh Allen has become from this ultra raw quarterback, someone that I wasn't very high on because he had such a far way to go. The Bills signed 6 offensive linemen last year. They brought in more offensive linemen. They drafted one in the second round. They've done a great job to insulate Josh Allen and not have him think about the pass rush all the time. So more than anything else, first round pick, it's a pretty good offensive tackle class. I think that's priority number one. Second and third round, and then in free agency, bring in some more wide receivers to complement Keenan Allen. So I think more than anything else, and you've seen Justin Herbert under pressure quite a bit, and he still made those plays, but letting him not be pressured almost half the time he drops back to pass would be the next step in him from going a quality rookie to one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, Chris, I'll get you out here very, very quickly because we're up against it here, man. Burrow and Herbert have both shown incredible flashes and kind of given you a sense that maybe those two organizations have their next franchise quarterback. I know it's early, but that's kind of the vibe I think everybody gets when you watch them play. Do you think Tua will show out in his debut? Do you expect any big things from Tua the way that we've seen with Herbert and Burrow?
I don't know if I'll see, like, I don't know if I'm expecting the type of impressive performances from Tua as I've seen from Burrow and Herbert. I'm a little concerned about Tua's arm strength and the fact that he's not quite the athlete that Burrow or Herbert are, and his offensive line isn't very good. It's better than it was in Miami, but, you know, that formula of a bad offensive line at times and a quarterback that can't really extend outside the pocket and has a weaker arm, I think he'll be good because he's accurate. What we've seen from Burrow and Herbert, given their situations, has just been outstanding.
Yeah, great stuff. Chris Trapasso of CBS Sports, really good stuff. A good article. Go check it out on our Twitter account and at CBS Sports as well. And give Chris a follow at Chris Trapasso on Twitter. You can see his handle there on our show account. Great stuff, Chris. Thanks so much for hopping on, man. Good piece. And we'll have to catch up with you to talk some more prospects heading into the draft, given Penei Sewell might be one of the top picks in the draft this year.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime. Thanks.
All right. There we go. Good stuff from Chris Trapasso of CBS Sports, who highlights the big difference from Herbert's offense his last year in Eugene to what it's become in L.A.
They ran the ball 20% of the time on third and long. You have arguably...
Not good, Bob.
Not even arguably. You have one of the top four quarterbacks in the country, and it's bared out where he was drafted and the way he's playing early on. And on third and seven plus, 20% of the time, you didn't even trust him to go pick up a first down with a good offensive line. Yeesh. Thank God the Chargers are taking off the reins a little bit and letting him play, because it's fun to watch.
All right, we'll stick in the NFL. Coming up next, the Seahawks finally get a pass rusher. That's next on The Fan. Well, we should have known this was coming. By the way, we'll get to the Wisconsin story, a canceled football game in the Big Ten at the bottom. Stouter story around the corner as well. This was tweeted on October 25th.
Okay, 3 days ago.
6,000 square feet city view with huge balcony, 4-bedroom, 4.5 bathroom in one of the best school districts for sale. Do your market analysis and make me offer. Serious inquiries only with proof of funds. Owner is willing to sell furnished or unfurnished. That was defensive lineman Carlos Dunlap when he was with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, they lost to the Browns, and he immediately took to Twitter and tried to sell his house, which is never a good sign that things are going well.
That has since been deleted. I went and checked his Twitter account. He's got like two tweets since July that are still up. But if you maybe slept in, you didn't hear the news. The Seattle Seahawks, they made a trade. They traded offensive lineman B.J. Finney and a 7th-round pick in the 2021 NFL Draft for veteran D-end Carlos Dunlap. So the Seahawks finally get some more defensive help. You expect Snacks Harrison to come back and move up from the practice squad to potentially the starting lineup. So your defensive line could be Snacks Harrison and Carlos Dunlap. There's also a report out there, and we'd have to maybe check in with our guy Brady Henderson at some point Thursday or Friday. There's a report out there that they're also still shopping for another.
Yeah, they're not done yet.
Defensive line. So they're seeing this season and saying, we can win a damn Super Bowl if we can get somewhat of a pass rush and a stop in the front. And so they had a pretty big piece in veteran defensive end Carlos Dunlap.
Yeah, the Seahawks' chips were moved to the middle of the table when they traded the picks that they did to go get Jamal Adams. They're in a win now mode. They're all in, and this is what they needed to do. They have one weakness as a football team. The defense isn't great as a whole, but the primary weakness of the defense is the fact that they cannot pressure the quarterback. Somebody had a funny tweet this morning saying, good addition for Seattle. Carlos Dunlap had as many pressures against Kyler Murray as the entire Seahawks defense did Sunday night. Basically highlighting why this was such a big need.
By the way, that's zero.
Exactly. So they added somebody who hopefully can get pressure on the quarterback.
Man.
Dunlap is a guy, look, it didn't end well for him in Cincinnati. You highlight the he's trying to sell his house on Twitter. He got into a vocal argument with his defensive line coach, I believe, on the sidelines end of the game that led to this, and that's why everybody's been speculating that he was going to be traded. Been in Cincinnati his entire career. I think he's 31 years old, and he's been, I mean, you look over his career, in which he's played more than 12 games. You know, he's been banged up here or there, but not a ton, really, since early on. He's pretty set for about 8-9 sacks a season. He's been pretty – last year was 9, 8 the year before, 7.5, 8, 13.5, 8, 7.5. I mean, your first year in the league, he was 9.5. So he's pretty consistent on the production that he's going to give to you. I do want to see them continue, or at least if I'm a Seahawks fan, I want to see them continue to be aggressive and find other ways to improve the defense. And the only question when they made this move was – how do you make it work financially? And I believe I read the B.J. Finney bro, who was their backup center, they had signed him to like a two-year, $8, $9 million deal, something like that. And so in trading that, they were able to lax the salary cap issues a little bit because they don't have a lot of money to spend. So it's not easy to maneuver and make moves like this at this point in the season. But they address a positional need, and I think it's a great win for Seattle.
Yeah, it's pretty big. Plus the experience you get from him.
He's a veteran.
He's been in the game since 2010 as a reference point. Now, he only has one sack on the year, but there's something about teams like Seattle that when they get this kind of player, they end up getting a little more production than what that player previously was given. Plus, it's a change of scenery.
Yeah,
I'm sure he's going to love that player first, you know, culture that Pete Carroll has established. Russell Wilson seems pretty easygoing. Some people might not like him, but he seems pretty easygoing in that locker room. And you got other vets to kind of be there with. You got young Jamal Adams, who's probably going to keep you lively. You got Bobby Wagner, who's one of the best in that position all time. KJ Wright's been in the game a long time. I think that's going to be a pretty solid move and a great move for them because, to me, even though you signed B.J. Finney to a two-year deal, so what?
He lost the starting center job. Yeah. He wasn't even a starting offensive lineman.
He wasn't competing. He was sitting on the sidelines anyway. Trade that. And if they want a seventh-round pick, if you were to ask me, would I rather have a seventh-round pick? I think sometimes in the draft, in the NFL at large, we get so enamored with draft picks. And sometimes I kind of just shake my head because I see the instant reaction from so many people. Oh, my God, that's so much to give up. If the Seattle Seahawks win the Super Bowl this year, who's going to tweet about that first round pick for Jamal Adams?
Yeah, nobody is.
It ain't going to be me.
Right.
And all those people that did, are you going to say that, okay, I was wrong, it was worth it?
Because yeah, wait and see what the Jets do with those first round picks.
Well, it's the Jets. Yeah. And if you asked any Seahawks fan, would you rather have two first round picks or win a Super Bowl this year?
Take the Super Bowl any day of the week.
Absolutely you do, because you never know if you're ever going to have another chance to win that. So, look, first round picks are a different conversation. I think we even value those a little too high because it's such a crapshoot. When you get to like 3 to 7, I kind of view them as a wash. If you think you're going to get good production from Dunlap, it's far and away worth a seventh round draft pick, especially if it increases your odds in the gauntlet that is the NFC playoff race.
Yeah, and I think your point on the fresh start is a good one. This is a guy that's going from a team that had the worst record in the NFL last year, hence why they drafted number one overall, to going to a team that has a legitimate shot at winning a Super Bowl this year. That's a pretty good injection of energy, I would say, for a guy like Carlos Dunlap. And you're looking at Seattle right now. They lead the offense, I believe, in yards per game. The last time they led the NFL on that stat was 2005, a year that they ended up getting to the Super Bowl. So they're putting up incredible numbers on that side of the ball. We know how good they are. You just have to find a way to go from being one of the worst defenses in the NFL to just being a bad defense. Like, that's the only jump that you need to make. You don't need to be top five.
They're the second worst defense in the league.
You just need to jump into that, 16 to 17 kind of range. Just be run-of-the-mill, and you're going to win a lot of football games. And all of a sudden for them, I think that not only is their attention on winning the Super Bowl, but they also have a short-term goal, and that is the NFC West, and that race has tightened up a lot. You go back a week and a half ago, before the 49ers kind of turned it around, before the Rams got their win on Monday night, before Seattle obviously lost to Arizona, it kind of felt like it was their division and they were going to run away with it. Then they lose. The Niners have turned it around the last 2 weeks with dominating wins. The Rams, who we weren't quite sure about, had a dominating win on Monday Night Football. So all of a sudden, you looked at it and thought, man, Seattle's going to run away with it. Now it's a little bit tighter than what it was before, and I think for them, not to say that they can't do it on the road because they went into Philly and got a playoff win last year and they damn near knocked off Green Bay on the road, but they rely on that home field advantage. It is such an added benefit for them when they get to play in front of the 12s, and I know they're probably not going to pack stadiums in the playoffs, but just playing at home in the playoffs, I think, would be a big thing for them. So that's goal number one, and they took a step towards that, I think, today.
Well, we'll see if they're going to make any more moves. Maybe we can get Brady on. We've had him on almost every week during the season. Maybe we can get him on this week to give us an idea of they're looking at another, but the Seattle Seahawks, if you're just tuning in, traded and got Carlos Dunlap from the Bengals, the veteran defensive end. He's been in the league since 2010. They gave up B.J. Finney, backup offensive lineman, and a seventh-round pick, so they add some depth to their defensive line, which has been pretty non-existent so far this year. Zero pressures, on Kyler Murray on Sunday night. All right, coming up next, we'll stick in football, but we'll pivot to college. We got our first canceled game, and it's in the Big Ten involving Wisconsin and Nebraska. We also have an update for the positive test results that were in Eugene, and we'll get to all of that next.
All right, welcome back in 132. We got sadder story coming up in the final hour. I'm assuming it'll be Dodger related. You can probably guess on that one.
Well, he only said hat, yeah, like kind of.
Only a little bit. Wow, not going full bore.
I would have thought he went
like Oral
deep.
Hershiser stats.
Oh,
and,
man, the Bulldog.
Come on.
It is World Series postseason encompassing.
By the way, what jersey is that? Is that a Kershaw?
No. This is, it's significantly older.
Okay.
27, when I first purchased it, was Kevin Brown.
Good old Kevin Brown.
Now.
Yeah. Yes. I loved Kevin Brown.
Well, Kevin Brown,
seemed
when
like
he was
a-hole.
With the Padres,
yep.
he championed my rotisserie league teams to two consecutive wins.
Of course.
And some nice dough. So then when he became a Dodger, I'm like, I'm all in.
Got to get that. Also, World Series champ with the Marlins.
Yeah. With the Marlins. Mm-hmm. It did not work out in L.A. the way everybody was hoping.
No, he did not have a great run with the Dodgers.
And he quickly moved on, I think, to the Yankees and wherever, other parts.
Did not work out well there either.
Then 27 became Matt Kemp.
Mm-hmm.
So we removed the name and put Kemp back there. And then
Wait, can I see it on and off?
Like, yeah, you can see stitches
see
the back.
Oh, really? Oh, you can.
Oh.
Why wouldn't you just keep it a Kevin Brown jersey? You just wanted to change the name up?
Yeah. Okay. And Kemp, when he first came, Kemp was great.
Oh, he was great, yeah.
He had an almost MVP season there 1 year.
Yeah. Side note, by the way, Matt Kemp got really fat this year.
Yeah, when he showed really up with fat. It was the Padres, right?
I think he was with the Padres,
pulled him off the wood pile.
I think some athletes, they work so hard. I think they get to a point in their life where they're just like, I've exercised more than any human being needs to exercise.
Yeah. I remember watching a game, and there was a guy that got on first, and it was like, oh, who's that? Whoa, whoa. Yeah. And then you like realize it was Matt Kemp. Like, okay.
So wait, where did the Kemp name go?
You just took it off.
Yeah, that came off.
So where's the Kershaw?
This isn't Kershaw's number.
Yeah, he's not number 27.
He's 22. There's 22,
you're
currently
right.
No 27 on
the
team.
Wasn't Verdugo a 27?
He might have been.
I think they traded him, obviously.
But yeah,
so
he was
not long enough to
well,
get
he
it.
Was. I think he was part of the Mookie Betts deal.
I think he was. Yeah.
So we'll wait for the next great.
So you're just going a blank 27
sure,
to the
I love
next
it. 27.
That's a beauty, though. Some jerseys, especially baseball, not all, but some baseball jerseys don't have the last name on the back. And there is a benefit to that because you just get a number and you don't know if the players come and go or change.
And I might just keep it that way at this
point. Unless you go with a retire. Like if you got a Bonds Giants.
Sure.
Yeah
24. Yeah, I mean, 42 Dodger jersey. You know some of those. Yeah. No doubt about it.
That would be a cool purchase.
There you go. Kevin Brown. I like that to Matt Kemp. It's had different names, man. We'll see what the next one is. Let's get to this. So pretty big news out of the Big Ten today. We told you about it yesterday and became official today, and that is that the Wisconsin-Nebraska game has been canceled. So this was always the dilemma for the Big Ten and the Pac-12 in starting a little bit later is that you don't have weeks throughout the season to reschedule games. There's no bye weeks for these teams. They're trying to play every consecutive weeks until their conference championship. There's not a week off prior to the conference championship game. So they don't have that benefit, and they had to cancel the game. Not going to be played. Wisconsin-Nebraska, it is off the books. 12 people within the program have tested positive at Wisconsin, including their head coach, Paul Chris, and they have crossed what is considered the threshold of percentage positive cases. I have enjoyed the conspiracy theories that have floated out of Nebraska Twitter. I don't know if you've seen any of these.
Dude, you're going to have to help me with this. Nebraska Twitter thinks they are the most picked on program.
It's a thing.
Or team in sports. I mean, everything that happens, they think everybody's out to get them versus just saying, I don't know, we've largely sucked for a decade plus. Maybe it's an us problem.
The great people in Nebraska, but they have
very nice people in Nebraska.
A hair of inflated sense of importance, I think, of their program. So the two takes that immediately came out were, one, Wisconsin didn't want to play this game because they have their four-string quarterback. They don't want to lose the game. So they went to the Big Ten and said, we don't want to play the game. And the Big Ten, because we all know the Big Ten hates Nebraska and is out to get Nebraska, granted them the ability to not play this game, hence not handing Wisconsin a loss on the season.
Well, who wants to play a game with their fourth string quarterback anyway? Wouldn't Nebraska be saying, hey, if we could not play this game because we have a fourth-string quarterback, that'd be great.
Sure, but that it's not the case. They crossed the positive threshold. So, first one's going to be canceled. And Nebraska is efforting. I don't know if the conference, again, we know the Big Ten hates them, will allow them to do it. They're efforting to find a non-conference opponent for this weekend.
Oh, that's kind of a cool idea.
Does BYU have a game this week?
BYU would be a big win for them.
I believe they do. Let me look that up. I don't know if they're allowed to do it, though, because the Big Ten protocols.
That's right. They're sticking conference only.
Conference only, so I don't know. know if it's, let me see if BYU has a game. Like, it's, but there's been a number of other games that have already been canceled this weekend. So they're trying to effort to bring one of those cancelees into Lincoln and play this one. But first one, and this is the concern for the Pac-12, is that if you miss a game, you miss it. There's no making it.
It's over. And look, we talked about this at the start of the Big Ten returning, and then we knew the Pac-12 was going to return.
Yeah, BYU plays Western Kentucky this weekend.
The 19 Marshall's game got postponed at Florida International.
Oh, well, who postponed that, Marshall or Florida?
Yeah, you got to see who was the team that was the cause.
If you could get Marshall on a last-minute call, that'd be a pretty good game for them. We knew going in that this was a possibility, and this is why I didn't freak out personally when the Pac-12 announced 7. Now, you could flip this and say, well, the Pac-12 is going to have this with a team or two or a few, and what if they only play 5? Well, if they only play 5, that's, we knew what we're getting into going into this. It's a weird year. I'm still not convinced the SEC is going to get all the way through it, and if they have a game or two missed, I wouldn't be shocked. But this was within the realm of possibility that if a team had it bad enough, you had no makeup room, and you were just going to have to say, well, tough luck. It sucks for Nebraska. It really sucks for Wisconsin, but you can't play a game. The head coach got it, and 12, I wouldn't be shocked if that number went up in a day.
It's 12 that have tested positive in the last like 2-3 days.
And so we'll see if it continued to pass through to other people, but we knew this was a possibility going in, and yeah. I don't know. We've had him on before, like Brett Ciancia of Pick 6. He's a pretty vocal guy. He loves to give his opinion, and I love that. He was hammering the Big Ten on this. He's like, this is the Big Ten's fault. This is why you come back early. And it's like, they secured the proper testing. You know, and I understand we all want the most games played we can get. I want the Pac-12 to play more than 7. But I just also want to make sure that they're safely guarding the situation. Because I have a different view than a lot of people about unpaid labor being asked to basically be essential workers. And that's a different conversation. But it doesn't matter if we differ on that. I'm glad these conferences have the proper adequate testing. And so I don't get the opinion of bashing a conference when they already reversed their course. They were going to not play.
They brought it back.
And they reversed it. Now they gave themselves a limited window, but I don't follow the bashing of the conference. You knew this was a possibility. Yeah. This is a possibility for the SEC. And they started earlier. So let's not bash conferences for this. They didn't give Wisconsin COVID. It's running pretty rampant in Wisconsin right now. They're actually running out of hospital rooms. But I just don't follow that logic of let's bash the conference because a program has to cancel the games. We knew this was possible going in.
It appears Florida International had to call off the game. They did not have enough available scholarship players. So number 19 Marshall would appear
to not have any issues,
to be able to do it if they were allowed and can put it together in 48 hours.
It'd be interesting to see if that takes place. You're going to have to petition the Big Ten, and the Big Ten is very strict on this stuff. And I think that's the other reminder here is that the presidents in the Big Ten did not want to come back and play football. They were very hesitant to do so. There was a level of public outcry and the other conferences playing, and I think the financial situation had a lot to do with it. That they ended up changing course and making their decision. But you got to keep in mind here, too, with Wisconsin and what they're going to go through going forward, it's a 21-day quarantine for any player that tests positive. And any, I don't know if that how it applies to coaches and how that works, but
they
I know
are
for the players.
A lesser.
It's not 21 days for the coaches.
For coaches, it's like 10, I think.
So it all of a sudden, depending on how many positive cases you get going forward the rest of the week, you're wondering where. Is it two? You know, how long does this affect you? Because it's 3 weeks. You're going to have a chunk of your players that are going to be out. And I've seen some people criticize the 21-day thing, and I get it. It seems a little extreme. I wanted to read this, though, because I saw it earlier today. This was from the team doctor at Ohio State, James Borchers. They did their press conference September 16th announcing they were coming back, and this is what he said about why it was a 21-day thing. And he said, our experts agreed it needed to be at least 14 days from the positive COVID test before their cardiac testing was completed and evaluated by cardiology experts and that athlete cleared. And then there's the recommendation that if we have any athlete who's recovering from illness or injury needs a transition period before they get back into activity, we wanted to put clear guidelines that being on a 7-day transition period. So effectively, an athlete who was COVID positive, the earliest they could return to competition is 21 days after testing positive. So their theory was, we had to deal with the heart issues and the cardiac stuff in the offseason. That's why we initially canceled. We don't feel like we can get a clear picture on what this does to your heart until 14 days. So that's where the 21 days comes from. And if you pass all the cardiology tests after 14 days, they then want to give you a week to make sure that you can gear up and practice and get your conditioning back underneath you, and then you're ready to play. And that's where the 21-day positive or 21-day quarantine thing comes from. I just thought it was interesting to hear that explained from a team doctor of, this is what we were thinking.
That makes a little more sense when you kind of hear it that way. Yeah,
it does. And the other one that I've seen floated is, and we've mentioned this with every other sport, the NFL included most recently, is, why isn't this a forfeit for Wisconsin? They're dealing with an outbreak. Nebraska isn't. The athletic directors in the Big Ten, when they announced their return to play, voted unanimously to not have forfeited games.
Because they don't want to screw in Ohio State, Michigan, a Wisconsin, whoever is in contention to win the Big Ten or get a playoff spot. You don't want to screw them with a loss.
Yeah. So they're saying, no, it's not. It's just we can't play it. And we'll see if they end up, you know, granting Nebraska the ability to play this week. Their policy is unique, too, because Florida has had their game canceled or postponed, I should say, at least for now, the last week. And we'll see if they can play this upcoming week. The SEC's policy is number of scholarship players that are available to play. And again, the Big Ten's is about positivity rate. It's not about the number of players that are out. It's about the number of positive tests that you're returning inside your program. They cross that threshold. Therefore, their game against Nebraska has been canceled, and we'll see if the Huskers can play somebody this upcoming weekend. We do have a bit of good news on the Oregon football program, as that came out earlier today, and they're returning to practice. So we'll let you know what that is as we continue to get closer to the start of the Pac-12 season. We've got some other NFL notes I want to get to as well. And then coming up at the top of the hour, we got to wedge some NBA stuff, and there's a lot going on in the NBA today. So we'll get to that coming up top of the hour. Crunch time next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, crunch time is brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Don't forget, today through Saturday, they're running a $1 enrollment on any membership. You also get a $25 gift card if you sign up. So $1 to enroll, $25 gift card. That is an awesome deal. And I was at the Glorious House of Gains this morning.
So was I.
Look at you.
Look at us.
Look at us.
Look at us.
What'd you do today? What was your workout routine?
It was leg day.
Leg day.
And
leg days suck, man.
Leg days are not great, although I do enjoy them the most because of the mental aspect of getting through a 80-minute leg day.
I had leg day last week. We had to do it on Thursday. We used to do leg days on Wednesdays, but we did one on Thursday, and I'm pretty sure it lingered until Tuesday.
I've had, I had that last week.
Like walking around like, really? Still?
Yeah.
Still? I'm still limping? Come on, man.
You know, my favorite exercise to do is the one I hate the most. Weighted lunges.
Oh, lunges suck.
You walk one way and you have to turn around and walk right back with them.
That's the worst, man.
They're brutal.
That's the worst. All right. Well, the Wisconsin-Nebraska thing sucks for the Big Ten. We hope that it won't be a case in the Pac-12, although I can't remember which one of you brought it up, but one of you did in the last segment. You also look at the climate around some of these universities. So thankfully, at least in Oregon, like, some of our numbers have gone up with COVID, but like our highs, I still think are like 600, I think was our record-breaking day, if I'm not mistaken, last week. We just broke our record for the most cases in a day. Just to give you a glimpse, like in the last, I don't know, week or so, they've had, like, just yesterday, Wisconsin announced 5,300 new cases. It's an area of the country that is popping up, and that's going to affect it. So at least for the local schools like Oregon and Oregon State, you hope, as long as things continue somewhat steady here, that it hopefully won't affect the football
programs. Well, I was going to ask you this. I should have looked it up because I know you're going to ask that, but or mention it. Isn't Lane County, they were dealing with a pretty bad little outbreak, because I kept seeing like the Mosleys of the world saying, hey, can we wear masks if we care about football?
Yes, there was an initial
mini outbreak
when all the students started descending, because they started at the end of September, and they saw their rates
right when
spiking.
Kids started to get there. Couldn't have predicted that, right? College kids coming back on campus. Let me see here. I'm trying to pull up just on Google. Lane County. It doesn't look like it's that. I mean, they have 2,400 cases.
Okay.
I think that's in the total of the time that we've had it. So It's not too bad.
You had a scare down there.
You did. And there was five players that tested positive initially, and they had to cancel their scrimmage this weekend. Oregon, though, reported yesterday they returned to practice in the Mario Cristobal at a press conference last night, and they PCR tested everybody to make sure things were on the up and up, and they ended up being false positive tests. So Oregon returned to practice, returned to getting ready for the week. Cristobal, in his press conference last night, said he thinks the team's going to be ready. They weren't too affected by it, and they're getting scrimmage-type things into their practice this week. But a bit of good news, because that was a scare for Oregon. You wonder where it goes. Five guys early on, you haven't even started scrimmaging yet. Like, we're trying to gear up for game number one, and you're already dealing with it. So great news out of Oregon, at least, that they're not going to be affected by that long term.
It's really good news. Anytime you get a late night press conference, you just had it a couple days prior, and it wasn't good to have. Is it five players or five people? Because weren't they?
Yeah, they said five people. It's very true. Five people within the program.
Yeah, well, you're just glad that all five ended up having false positives. And this is the beauty of having the secondary testing, is you can basically find out right away how valid that first test is, and put yourself in a position where if it's players that have it, or at least with the false positive, you find out enough in time to get ready for that game on Saturday or Friday or whenever the hell you play it.
Yep. So good news down in Eugene. Let's get to a couple NFL notes. This one, like, we talk about bad beats from time to time. Did you guys see this story about the DraftKings bro and how much money he lost?
Yes. Oh my God. On the run pass call that they made or whatever it was.
He was in a, like one of those DraftKings, I don't do DraftKings stuff, but he was in one of those like fantasy contests where the winning prize for first place is $1 million.
I've done one of these.
You have done one of these.
I had a very brief stint with DraftKings here on the Fan or FanDuel, and it's cool. It's you put in money, and you get your X amount, and you build a fantasy team.
Okay.
And then you're entered into these different, you can choose different leagues, and it's basically you against a ton of other people, and whoever has the most productive fantasy day, you win the grand prize. It's really hard to win because there's so many people.
Yes.
But I know people that have won like 500, couple grand.
Oh,
like
that's not bad. Okay.
Because if you finish at a certain level too, you get some money back.
You get payouts. It says on this one there were like 177,000 entrants into this contest. So that highlights how difficult it is. There was, at the end of the game, 24-10, Monday Night Football ends. One of his lineups that featured both the Bears and Rams defense ended up being the number one lineup of all of the entrants, which then his computer screen showed him he won $1 million, the $1 million prize. He started texting with friends. He called his parents. He let everybody know. He was playing with his dog. Like, this dude was fired up. He just won $1 million on a fantasy football event. Well, today, a sack that was credited to the Bears defense late in the fourth quarter was changed to a running play. Yeah. That was a 3-yard loss against Jared Goff. So that 3-yard loss, going away from a sack to just a normal running play, caused him to be pushed back into a tie for sixth place with 18 other entries, and his winnings dropped from $1 million to $3,078.
You're happy you win. I am irate, and I'm contacting them and discussing, how did you do that? He lost 3 yards, and you're classifying it as a run?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Yeah, they went back. The NFL went back, and I guess they go back and look at it, you know, in the aftermath and make sure all the calls or the stats bear out correct and all that kind of stuff. And I'd have to go back, and I don't know if anybody had seen the play or what happened, you know, but they somehow didn't think that it was a sack. I'm trying to read up on it. Okay, so Goff faked a handoff to the right side. He bootlegged back to the left. And Bears linebacker James Vodders didn't bite on the fake, and him and Hicks brought him down 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
So it was a play-action rollout.
So it's a play-action bootleg, yeah. And they counted it as a sack initially. I'm wondering, is it because he was running like towards the line of scrimmage, or because the receivers were I don't know why that was.
So who sacked him?
It was Vodders and Akeem Hicks. They brought him down together 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
I'm going to look this up right now. See
this
if it's
is
on
like
YouTube.
You see those videos sometimes of the guys that get like their friends play a joke on them, duping them, making them think they won the lottery, like the fake numbers, and the guy loses his mind thinking he's a millionaire.
I'm assuming they base it off the actual. I mean, it's not DraftKings. It was
the NFL decision.
The official scores for the game, and then there's a review process to make sure they get it all right.
Yeah, it says because the Rams wide receivers appeared to be blocking downfield, it was an indication that it was a designed run. And sacks are not credited on design runs.
I can't find it on YouTube. I'd love to rewatch that play.
I'd be curious to watch it again.
To see how we would classify it, because that sounds like a classic McVay throwing down.
This same guy said that he lost. This stuff happens all the time. They do this, and you'll see this in baseball games. They'll give a guy an error, and you go back and look at it after the game. It happens in hockey with assists, and make sure you get all the numbers right.
Yeah, NBA stuff, they sometimes go back and look at assists or rebounds, that sort of thing.
Right. Maybe you give we counted that one wrong. But so this happens in the NFL. And this guy apparently said that he has lost out earlier this year. He was in another fantasy contest and he lost out on $5,000 in another fantasy contest because of a stat change.
Man.
So that is just brutal, man. He is. So he ended up winning $3,000. You got that going for you. But you imagine thinking you won $1 million and you ended up only bringing home $3,000. That is absolutely brutal. One other quick NFL note, too. The league announced today the Super Bowl is being played at Tampa this year. And not a shock here. We just saw it in the World Series. They're planning on 20% fan capacity for the Super Bowl.
That's going to be a little weird, isn't it?
It's going to be 20%
Super Bowl crowd.
Very. I mean, it's been weird in every sport. Hell, the NBA was played with friends and family there.
Isn't 20% of the Super Bowl crowd just corporate execs and huge agents who don't really have a rooting interest or care?
The stadium holds 65,000. They do temporary seating for Super Bowls and that kind of stuff that it could hold up to 75,000. So do your math. I think
about 15,000.
About 15,000. And they're going to be in pods, separated, all that kind of stuff.
What is your course of action, though? I mean, I guess you kind of have to just shut up and take your medicine and be happy that you got $3,000 in a contest that you probably spent a couple hundo on. Yeah, right. But to go from having $1 million to $3,000 is such a dramatic difference.
I don't even want to think about it.
That somehow you would win. Does it say how much you bet?
I did not. I don't believe say in there how
usually
much
usually people
bet.
In that will enter like $100 or something.
You put a little cash in. Yeah.
You go from 100 to 3,000. The fact that you won $3,000 and you still walk away pissed is the part that is the most hilarious to me.
That's life-changing money to, all right, I don't have to pay a mortgage for like 2 months. You know what I mean? Like, that is such a drastic change. Are you kidding me?
$1 million get my car fixed now.
Yeah, okay, I can put that, new AC unit in. All right, jeez. As opposed to, $1 million. Dear Lord, that's brutal. So there you go, a couple NFL notes. Bro misses out on $1 million in Daily Fantasy League because the stat in the Monday Night Football game was changed from a sack to a tackle for a loss, and the NFL's planning on 20% capacity at Raymond James Stadium for the Super Bowl in Tampa. Crunch Time is brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Don't forget, today all the way through Sunday, they're running a $1 enrollment on any membership that you sign up for, plus a $25 gift card. It's a great deal. So Sprague and I work out, and I'll be back there again tomorrow morning. Coming up in the final hour of the show, we got Saturday Story coming up at 2:15. I'm sure we'll dive back into the World Series because what a weird night it was for Major League Baseball. Blake Snell, you got to give him credit for the way he handled it. We'll get back into that a little bit. I want to start, though, with some NBA notes. Daryl Morey has landed on his feet. It didn't last him very long. We have an ownership change in the NBA.
A new head coach?
A new head coach in the NBA. We have rumored dates about when the league's going to start. And an NFL player petitioning an NBA team to come play in his city, man. There's a lot going on. We'll get to that. Start the final hour next on 1080 The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.